Wait, wait, stop. That's the one.
Welcome to Zenten Speaks, a show where I make new friends and reconnect with old ones. A show where everyone's stories may inspire you to tell your own story. In this podcast, we encourage everyone to get rid of shame, guilt, fear, doubt, and judgments for themselves and for others, and replace those with love, empathy, compassion, understanding, kindness, and to do your best in everything that you do. In essence, to get rid of things that no longer serve your well-being. To be true to yourself and be honest with others. No need to be politically correct. That's out the window with 2020. Here, we tell the raw, uncensored story, your story. And tell the truth as you see it. Make sure you live your fulfilled life without permission or apologies. So, if you have a juicy, interesting, raw, unapologetic story, and inspiring, please make sure to contact me at zenten21@gmail.com. It is zenten21@gmail.com. Or you can find me on most social media platforms. You know it, the IG, Instagram, Twitter, Facebook, OnlyFans. I mean, not really. But yes, OnlyFans. Just kidding. Not. As you may guess it, my name is Zen, and welcome to the show. Today we have a guest. Our guest is Corella Fairchild Pearson. Corella is a heartfelt artist, and she is also an ex-Jehovah's Witness. However, her religion now is love. She loves making art and traveling, and she preferred to be called Corey. And her art can be found on Facebook as well as Instagram. And I will post all the hashtags and all the links in the description below. But you can find her art at cloudtier.designs or chalkcrawl. Hashtag, and I'll put those on the description so we can all can see them. And the story she's about to tell us is of strength and bravery, and I hope you can get inspired by her story. And so thank you so much, Corella Fairchild Pearson, for being in the show. I appreciate you being here. Welcome.
I appreciate this too. Thank you.
Yeah, totally. So tell us about who you are and what brings you joy.
Who I am, I feel like I'm empathetic and I'm kind and funny and creative. I try to define myself by what I'm being and not what I'm doing, because I seem to lose myself in being a workaholic very easily. So that's who I'd say I am. And what brings me joy? Just being unapologetically myself and having that freedom and having a support network around me that celebrates that instead of trying to like moderate it or change it, you know, that brings me a lot of joy.
That's very important that you have a network that supports that.
Yes, I have a family of choice, which is a very, very beautiful family.
Great. And you mentioned something important that you like to focus on who you are instead of what you do, because a lot of people, my guru is Sadhguru, and he talked about work, how the Western world, work is who they are. And it's not true. And I guess because we're so focused on work, and we forget about who we are, and we're thinking the job that we hate is who we are. So when we talk about ourselves, we say, I'm a banker. Like, no, you're not. Banking is what you do beside being yourself. And so that's why I structure my question that way, because
I guess this pet peeve I've had is whenever someone meets me, they want to basically measure me about what I do as in work. Right. And so I tend to tell them who I am, and people get confused when you ask that question. Publicly, I'll just say it. You're the first person that I ask who you are, and you did not hesitate. You knew exactly where to go with the answer. And I love that.
Thank you. It's been a hard journey because I just went through a pretty deep depression because I was an educator. I was a teacher, and I really lost myself in it. And I'm just like getting chills thinking about it. I was really defining myself by being a teacher. And then I was like, well, I'm going to go back to being a full-time artist. So then I'm still defining myself that I'm an artist. Well, that's still, even though I love it, it's still an occupation. It's mm-hmm. still work.
Right.
You know, so I really try to focus on who am I? What if I lost my hands? Would I still be able to be an artist? Maybe, but I would still be kind, empathetic, creative, you know? It's a challenge because all around us, society is like saying, no, that's not who you are. Who are you? You know, you're like,
right. Yes. Oh my God. Wow. It's the same thing. When I tell them my character and what's in my heart, they get confused. They're like, no. And then I have to tell them, I think you need to rephrase your question.
Yes. Are you wondering if I make money? Oh, okay.
Exactly. Awesome. And by your, I was looking at your Instagram and I could feel, I believe, I practice energy and intuition. And I think once you tap into that and you focus on that, you can feel things, even if you are wherever you are right now. And I could feel the energy and I'm talking to you. It's confirming. So awesome. So what is your Jehovah's Witness story?
Well, first, I just want to say that I saw you post in an ex-Jehovah's Witness group. And, you know, we get very weary. Like, is this guy for real? But I looked at some of your videos and I immediately, my intuition said, yeah, this is good. This is good. So, and it was just a video of like shots of New York. It was beautiful. So I love that, you know, following your intuition. I would say yes. my journey in becoming a non-Jehovah's Witness has really focused on trusting my intuition, that's what I identify as God now.
Yes.
Whereas before being raised a Jehovah's Witness, it was always like looking outside, listening to what I was told or was reading that the leaders of the religion wrote for us to follow in our lives. And I just really try to focus on, no, what do I hear inside? And that is God, you know?
Yes.
These white old guys in New York telling us how to live our lives and where who we are, you know?
Oh my goodness. Do you know Dr. Wayne Dyer? You know of him?
That sounds familiar, but I don't know.
He passed away maybe 2017. I don't remember exactly the year, but I love his quotes. One of my favorite quotes that he says is, prayer is you speaking to God and intuition is God speaking back to you.
Yes, I think
I've seen that. Yes, it's so, and the thing is we're so accustomed to the word God, meaning religion or whatever it is. Mm-hmm. And God can be whatever, of course. And I believe that it's here. We are God because we all have the answers right here. If we stop and listen and feel it. Mm-hmm. And I can only speak from my experience and I have made sure I practice that. One day I woke up, I told the universe, I'm ready. Throw me any challenges because I want to grow. I'm tired of bullshitting myself and tired of wearing a mask for other people. I need to be my authentic self. And I'd rather be hated for who I am than be loved for what I'm not. That's another quote I've seen online. And so it's so true.
Yeah.
And thank you for doing your intuition work as well, because I do have people who reach out I do my best not to solicit it, as in reach out to people first, because it could seem, because I do understand being an ex, by the way, I'm ex-JW as well, and solicitating another ex-JW, because we have that religion trauma. So I totally understand. And when someone reach out back to me, some of them, not a lot, I would say maybe one out of 10 persons are skeptical and they have a lot of questions, and I answer all their questions freely. And I do understand where they're coming from, because they don't want to be exploited, because they've been exploited all their lives, definitely. And as my little ad, as I mentioned in there, my year of last year was to stop shaming myself, stop judging myself, and stop guilting myself. And I stopped doing that to others as well. And I want to inspire others to do the same if they want to, and to tell their story. When you tell your story, you stop the shame, you stop the guilt, and you stop the judgment. And other people watching you will be inspired to tell their story. So that's my goal. Hopefully that gets conveyed. And so thank you for participating.
Yeah, that's when you said no shame, no blame, no guilt, no fear. I was like, oh, that's what I'm all about. You know, too long did I let those things govern my life. And I've made the choice, and I may have to make the choice every day, sometimes multiple times a day, that shame, blame, guilt, fear, I just dismiss it. You don't serve me. You're not paying rent in my head. You're evicted.
Yes. Good. Definitely. So why did you leave the organization of Jehovah's Witnesses?
It's like not one single thing. I think because I was so into it and I studied so much that I saw a lot of red flags, like things that didn't make sense, circular reasoning, logical fallacies, but I could not admit that to myself. And I felt so bad about myself that I had like doubts, like God never seemed real to me, like the way we were taught to pray and like calling him Jehovah. I tried so, so hard, but it just never felt real when I would try to pray. And then they teach that when people die, they'll be resurrected into a paradise earth. That never seemed real to me, as bad as I wanted it to be real. It didn't feel like my reality, you know? So I felt so bad about that. And I felt like I don't belong. There's something wrong with me. So I dealt with depression and anxiety like really badly. To the point where I just didn't want to exist. Like I wasn't going to kill myself, but I was just like, I just don't want to exist. And I had to learn that it wasn't that I didn't want to live life. It's that I didn't want to live that life.
Oh, nice.
And I ended up married to this guy. So as a Jehovah's Witnesses, a lot of times you don't marry for love. You marry for how likely is this person going to get through the what they call the Great Tribulation and make it through Armageddon. How loyal are they to the organization? And not even to God, really, like to this man-made organization.
Right.
Yes. So I did not marry for love, and a lot of witnesses, I don't think they do. You know, the ones that do, they're still married. The ones that didn't, they married for like basically putting the religion first, they're not married anymore, you know, like me. And in my family history, there was a lot of sexual trauma. And so the only thing I knew about sex was like very negative things. And then the way we were taught as Jehovah's Witnesses, like sex is bad, until you get married, all of a sudden it's good. Like that was just so strange to me. And I immediately felt like I was being violated, even though I was in a consenting relationship. I also felt pressured that I had to have sex by the religious teachings. Like you literally, as a woman, if you are not having sex with your spouse enough, they can take you to the elders in the congregation. And these three men, whoever they are, they're not qualified. They're like window washers and plumbers and electricians. Like they're not qualified to give you advice. They will tell you, you need to have more sex with your husband. Like even your bedroom life is governed by this religion, you know? So I was just always feeling very, very bad about that, because I just was, I was traumatized. Like, even though I had never had sex, I was still traumatized. Well, come to find out, after being married for, I don't know, 4 years or something, that this person that I was married to, this is like really sensitive information. I hope I don't trigger anyone, but he...
You don't need to have names, just your story without names.
Well, just trigger warning for people who have been through sexual trauma. He had, according to his sister, her like multiple times when they were teenagers, along with his brother. And I, when I found out, I point blank asked him and he confirmed it, and I just flipped. Like, I flipped out. I have been praying to God so much, please help me marry the right person. And then I end up married to, like, to me, who I would think is a pedophile. And then also at the same time, because of all the depression and anxiety, I couldn't afford to see a psychiatrist. So I was seeing a family doctor, and he was just like trying all these different medicines. He finally tried lithium. Well, lithium made me manic, because that's for bipolar disorder. And apparently I didn't have that. I had PTSD. So it made me manic. I started spending money all crazy. I started partying and drinking. And I was like, I just don't want to be married. And according to Jehovah's Witness rules, you can't get divorced unless one of you commits adultery. So I was like, I'll do it. I'll go ahead and do it. I didn't want to, but I was like so brainwashed at this point. I was playing by their rules, you know, or what I thought were their rules. So I just like, I went to a birthday party, first time in my life, got drunk, had sex with this guy, went to the elders and said, okay, I don't want to be married anymore. I want a divorce. Like, I'm so sorry I did this, but I just want a divorce. And they said, no, the innocent, quote unquote, innocent mate gets to make the decision. Who's meanwhile, if, so my spouse got to make the decision whether we could get divorced or not.
Kidding.
Meanwhile, wow. He spent, like, we were so broke all the time. I was working 3 jobs. He was spending all our money on I found this out, like, I went to the cops. It was not legal. I went to the police and filed a report and all this stuff. But they disfellowshipped me, the elders. So I had to tell all this, like, all this sexual stuff to 3 men with no women there, no, like, emotional support for me. They said that because I hung out with my friend Jenny after they supposedly told me not to, that they were excommunicating me. They're disfellowshipping me. So in my mind, my life is over. God hates me. If Armageddon comes, Jesus is going to kill me. Like, I'm a terrible person. So I just started drinking a lot. I grew up in Washington State. My cousins had all moved to Alaska. They were not witnesses. So I ended up moving up there. I worked full-time job, and I cocktail waitress, and I partied. Like, I was so, so busy. I barely slept because I just could not handle the fact that I had no family, no support network. God hates me. I'm still sexually traumatized. You know, I really needed help. I needed psychiatric help. So I stayed there for like 6 months. My cousin Janessa was like, please don't move. And I was like, I know I can't take a winter in Alaska. I'll like end up either killing myself, or I was putting myself in danger all the time. I cannot believe that I wasn't like tied up in somebody's basement and murdered, you know, like, I cannot believe that. So I moved to New Mexico because my friend Jenny had moved there. I get into college. So this is all within like 9 months. I get disfellowship. I go to Alaska. I move to New Mexico. This is all in 2008. Get back into school in January 2009. I start like kind of calming down. So I'm just working one job and I'm going to school. And I end up here in Houston, Texas a couple years later. Every time I moved, I was like, you know what? I can be a new person. I can be the best version of myself. So I just kept trying to be a better person. it wasn't until I graduated from college in 2016, I physically just broke down and mentally. I spent 3 days in a mental hospital. It would have been longer if I had insurance. but they, like, when they figure out, they're probably not going to get paid, they let you go in like 3 days. But I learned from this man who, he had lived on the streets, you know, he had mental health problems. He was a recovering alcoholic. He was a therapist. He said, "You are your biggest problem." And I realized, because I thought I had all the answers. I just need more vitamin D. I need to eat more salads instead of sugar. But, you know, like, I had a bad attitude. I was like, I shouldn't be here. I don't need to be here. I know what I need, you know. And I just the way he said it, like, since he'd been there, done that, I believed him. Like, oh, I guess I am my own biggest problem. And so I've learned that the traumas that happen to us are not our fault, but it is our responsibility on how to handle them. And to admit, I don't have all the answers. I need help. So since 2016, I've been on that journey. I started practicing yoga and mindfulness. In 2017, I started researching Jehovah's Witnesses and finally, like, mentally broke free. So I was still mentally in, believing, what if they're right? I would wake up in the morning, my first immediate thought was, I'm going to die in Armageddon. And then I have to, like, be like, no, I'm here now. I'm okay. I don't believe in that stuff. I'm okay. I mean, that took years to get over. And I'm still working on, you know, the PTSD. Like, I can recognize triggers now, and I can, like, hang out with those negative feelings and let them go instead of reacting now. That's a skill I've gotten in the last couple of years, which has helped a lot. But it's always going to be, I think, a part of me that I'm going to have to manage. And that can be depressing at times. Like, you just want to, like, I want to be healed. I want to be good. You know? Right. But it is a journey. So that's where I'm at now. I practice yoga, mindfulness. I do what I love and love what I do for a living, but I try so hard not to get lost in letting that define me.
Yes. Wow. What a journey.
Yeah.
I've discovered that a lot of ex-GW's experiences are very different. And it makes sense why I thought only my journey was everybody's, because they make you feel like the organization is your life. Mm-hmm. So from what I saw around me, looks all pristine and nice. And when I left, I thought that was it. And when I saw all these people talking on the groups, I was shocked. And of course, in the beginning, it was disbelief, thinking people were just angry and lashing out. But then the more I saw them and the more credible they were, and I've realized, of course, like, the blinders went out. Of course, humans are humans, and people with power will do things. Like Spider-Man says, comes with Spider-Man or his Uncle Ben, comes, you remember that quote? Responsibility. Great power comes with responsibility, or something like that. Yeah. So a lot of people with power do not take responsibility with those power they held. Like those three men, they're not psychiatrists. They don't.
No. Yeah.
They have no. Wow. So are you still seeing a person? What are you seeing, a psychiatrist or?
Yeah, I see. I have a psychiatrist. I see her like once every 3 months, but I have a therapist that I see about twice a month. And she used to be a teacher too. So she understands that kind of stuff. And then I go to support groups. Free support groups have really been the thing that have helped me the most.
Nice.
If you go to supportgroupcentral.com, you can find so many different free support groups that you can go online or go in person. And it's hard at first because it's scary, But when you get there and you realize all these people are going through something similar and they just want to take responsibility and find ways to cope and find coping strategies, it is so helpful. It's so helpful to know you're not alone, and that there are strategies to live a full life. Something I forgot to mention is in 2014, my cousin Janessa, that I was talking about, who didn't want me to move away from Alaska, she was murdered. She had dealt with substance abuse as like a self-medicating thing, and ended up homeless. And this guy just, I guess, saw her as very vulnerable, and he just killed her for no reason. And until then, so from 2008 to 2014, I was agnostic, but I had this experience after she passed away, just learning how much life comes from death. Like, I stopped trying to people please. I was just done with it. I was sick of it. And, even with, you know, the only family I had left, you know, I was like so grateful to have biological family left that weren't Jehovah's Witnesses, so they weren't shunning me, but it wasn't healthy, and they weren't putting in the same amount of effort into our relationships as I was, I felt, you know. So I just was like, you know what, I'm just gonna focus on the people that are putting energy into me, and I'm putting energy into them, you know. I was editing a video of pictures of her at school, and my mouse kept sticking, and she was standing right here, and she started laughing at me, my cousin. And I turned to look at her and be like, stop laughing at me. This is frustrating. And of course she wasn't there, like physically, of course, because she had passed away. And that experience, I mean, it's so real. Like, it's still so real. And people would tell me experiences like that, and I just never understood, you know. But since then, that really started like my spiritual journey of, I go to church with my husband. I always would cry because as Jehovah's Witnesses, we're told, you don't ever step foot in another church. Even if it's like a relative died, you don't go to their services if it's at a funeral, at a church, or somebody gets married. So I would go to church with my husband. It was like really traumatic, but it was also very beautiful because I could sit there and believe whatever I want. Nobody cares. They're just happy you're there. Or like, if you're doing good, if you need prayer, they pray for you, you know, like nobody is like, are you thinking what we're thinking? Cause you should be believing what we're believing. No, like, and nobody's ready to like tattle on you if you're like doodling. Like, you know what I mean? Like, you're doodling crosses, you're like, crosses are bad, you can't drive. You know what I mean? Like, everywhere you turn around when you're a Jehovah's Witness, people are ready to tattle on each other because they feel their own salvation is at risk. And so to not be under that, and also if the pastor says something I don't agree with, I'm just like, oh yeah, I don't agree with that, and that's okay.
Yeah,
I don't have to feel like I'm gonna die in Armageddon because I don't agree with what this person saying. Like, it's amazing. It's very healing. And I was just like so dead set on, I'm gonna have a spiritual belief that is mine. I mean, I have unique fingerprints, I have unique personality. No human on earth is exactly the same. Even twins, they don't have exactly the same DNA, so why would there be only one way to believe for all of them, you know? Right. So that's been very healing as well.
Wow, that's so inspiring. So I like to ask this question to everybody. If things did not unfold the way it did, would you still be a Jehovah's Witness? Although before you answer that, it seems like you had maybe, I would say, doubt. So like other people, when I ask them that question, it's usually something that happens and it triggers them, but you had doubts, so therefore maybe you will still not be Jehovah's Witness since you wanted to go out because you had doubt.
I wonder that because I really was so hard on myself, and I thought that doubt was something wrong with me. In 2012, they changed their belief on this one prophecy because they're like, their prophecies don't come true as time goes by. And so they had this new belief of, called an overlapping generation.
Right.
And I wonder if I was still in, if that would have been like the final straw, or like right now they have so many settlements with sex abuse victims that they covered up. They knew who was doing it. They didn't report it to the law. So I wonder if that would have gone me out, but I don't know, because they're so good at brainwashing that, I mean, I really think it took this cocktail of being misdiagnosed, given the wrong medicine, finding out the guy I was married to was gross, like, to say the least. And I just like, just going unhinged, you know. And I think about it now, like, I did marry the right guy. I married the guy that got me out of that cult. You know what I mean? Like,
I like the way you think. That's what life is. It's things happen and it's how you respond to it. And that leads you to where you are now, etc.
Nice. I feel like, I always tell people I went out with a blaze of glory. I don't think, like, knowing my personality, I don't think there was any other way for me to get out. I think I might still be in, just because, you know, I don't want to lose my family. Because they emotionally blackmail you. You know, yeah. I don't believe that. Even if you're, like, sitting there, like, I don't believe any of this stuff. You're like, but I don't want to lose my family and my friend. Yep. You know, so I don't know. I think I might still be in, honestly.
I woke up one day and I was over it, which was weird because, well, first of all, I have a perfectionist and extreme personality. So if I'm in something, I'm in it. And if I'm out, I'm out. And there's usually a no gray, but I've been learning to be in the middle and have a gray thing. But it was challenging because whatever I do in my life, I don't get in any trouble, because whatever I do in my life, it's good for me. So therefore, it may bother somebody because they just don't like it, but it's not because it's bothering their life. So therefore, being the extreme and perfectionist works for me. But being in a relationship, I had to adjust because it's a collaboration when it comes to relationships. So I had to learn those things. And so I don't think I ever asked that question to myself. So I guess I'll ask it and answer now. Around 19 and a half, when I moved out and I was still going, because I was very zealous and I was still going and I believed in everything. And then the person who helped me moved, being a people pleaser, I wanted to be generous. I mean, or what's that generous? Thankful, gratitude. Mm-hmm. And he invited to dinner. So we went out to dinner and so he wanted to be friends. And I was like, well, can I be friends? But then I was just like, well, I don't have anyone who's my friend really. Because when we speak, he's not judging me based on Jehovah's Witness thoughts.
Yeah.
And then we end up having sex. And so when I woke up that one day, let's say, because I think we go to the hall on Tuesday, Thursday, and Sunday, because they have that book reading. And on Thursday, they have the whatever pamphlet.
Yeah,
something. And so it was like maybe a night after going to that book reading, we had sex, and then the next day I had a free day. And then the next day when it was to become a Thursday, I was just like, I'm not gonna gravel to men to go in a little room and say, oh, have sex and be reprimanded and go through that shame parade. Do you ever see Game of Thrones?
The shame parade.
shame. And I'm like, this, whatever. And I never went back. Wow. And then I had a phone number and the elders, which I was very close to everybody. And they start calling me and worrying about me because I just didn't answer the phone calls, went to voicemails and I didn't show up. So they probably thought I died. I kind of feel bad because when you disappear, people's thoughts go, you're dead. Yeah. And it's traumatic to feel that way. Yeah. And I ghosted them. And that, I feel like that was not nice on my part. but it's past, and that's what I did. I mean, they would ghost me too, right?
But they would hunt you down. Like, so, I mean, it depends on how zealous these elders are, right? But when I got disfellowship, they really wanted to talk to my friend Jenny and like disfellowship her, to the point where they were following me around trying to find her. So I met my ex-husband at Wendy's for some reason. I don't know, some like terminating our apartment rental or something. And I get up to leave and there's two elders sitting there watching us the whole time, thinking that Jenny was going to come with me so that they could corner her and disfellowship her. And then I've heard stories of like them camping outside of people's apartments, like trying to corner them just so they could excommunicate and, you know, disfellowship them.
Right.
So they can do that. Know, like, it's probably good that you ghosted them, because they would have, even though you're like, I don't want to talk to you, I don't want to have this shame parade, they would have like done it anyway. You know
what I mean? Right. I've thought, you know how sometimes, I don't know if it ever happened in your congregation, where they'll have that little reading letter. They won't say what you did, but they'll say then your name and how you excommunicated, and everyone's all like, oh my God, and shame. So they probably have done that behind my back, but I didn't care for any of that. And since then, I never thought of them. I saw them preaching because I still lived in the area, and I see them preaching and they're doing their thing.
Yeah.
And I didn't care. And I eventually changed my number because my mom kept harassing me, calling. And I eventually talked to her and so I changed my number. And till this day, we talk and sometimes not. And I block her once a year. She changed her number and called me. And I block her because I don't want to be harassed. And it's not because I hate her, like she says. Yeah. It's kind of like a blame thing. Why don't you like me? And I say, because I'm worldly. Shouldn't you leave me alone?
Yeah.
You're not practicing whatever. And she's like, well, I'm trying to get you back in. And I'm like, I'm not interested. She invited me, last time I blocked her, she invited me to the memorial. And I said, thank you so much. I'm very on my delivery. Even if someone tried to hurt me, funny thing is, even people at work or strangers says, do you ever get mad? And I actually have to ask that question, because even on my delivery, even if I feel offended or mad, but I make sure what comes out of me is not sour grape kind of a thing.
Yeah.
So I respond as in, thank you so much for thinking of me and sending me that. I appreciate you. However, this is not where my life is. Please do not send me those things anymore. That's very polite and kind, like boundaries. Basically. And I blocked her.
They don't understand boundaries, though. That was something new I had to learn. So that's sweet of your mom. I always wonder, because like my family, they were trying to help me get back in. But once I was like, I cannot do this. Like, they wanted me to live at my parents, you know, my parents wanted me to live with them again. I was 26. I'm like, I can't do this again. Like, have you, my mom dictating everything. So I packed my suitcase, got in my car, I was homeless because I just couldn't do it. I ended up I would like couch surf until I finally could move to Alaska, just staying with people I knew from work I was just like work people I knew. I could sleep
on the couch. That's so great.
Because I told my dad, my mom started crying. She locked herself in a room and my dad's like, don't go. And I was like, Dad, I just cannot do this. That's when the shunning started. When I wasn't under their control. I really think my mom was like, oh, my poor, sick, mentally ill child. Now I can take over her life and live it for her as if I know the best way to do that. And I was like, I can't. I just can't.
Wow. Are there any principles that you learned from being Jehovah's Witness that you apply in your life today?
I think being able to establish common ground with like anybody, like we had to do door to door, you know, that has proven helpful. I feel like I'm very brave. I'm an introvert, but I can go talk to people. I had to force myself to be extroverted, which caused mental illness. But now that it's like, oh, I'm aware of it, I'll do it when I choose. Like, I feel like it's a skill now. So they call that ambivert, you know, or you're an introvert, but you're capable of being extroverted. And right. Then being being studious, like I did really well in college because I was so used to studying all the time, you know. I really loved how we had an international brotherhood, although we were taught to not see color, which is terrible because then you don't see a big part of who people are. Like, it was very white centric, you know. Like, I can remember, like, Black American kids being told, like, you're being worldly, and they weren't. They were just, that was Black culture, and you're trying to enforce white culture on all of us.
Yes. Oh, my God. Especially with
that. Yeah, when I realized that after, because,
like, when, especially Black men, when they start growing hair, you had to basically have it like this. And a white brother would have hair longer, and that was okay. So, yeah.
All kinds of stuff like that, yeah.
Wow.
Yeah, like having to speak proper English. Well, what's proper? Who decided that's proper? White men, you know? Like, that's, I don't know. It's just, it's like the things that you think, well, at least they had this, at least they had that, and then realizing it always served a purpose for them to mind control you is so, like, it's like you're still, I still feel like I'm still waking up. You know, even though, like, in 2017, I did most of my waking up, there's still, like, once in a while, something will pop up in my head, and I'll be like, oh, well, at least we had this. Like, oh, we were really studious. Yeah, we were kept in a childlike state of mind. Mm-hmm. You know, so it's like, there was...
How much of that was genuine, too? Because I know my family, once they got home, they were Wolverines.
Yeah. Yeah, it was... very appearances. Like, my mom was all about appearances, and then at home it was terrible, like so much verbal abuse and
and physical in my house too. Yeah, verbal and physical. That's one of the things that pushed me out, because I was like, how can you be so hateful? She was hateful in her words and her physical, and even toward my dad too. And he, another thing too, the Bible says the man is a household, whatever, and he was not. So there was so many things going on, and that was like so confusing. And I couldn't ask some questions, and I couldn't say anything. But I was pretty favored by the elders and everyone else in the congregation. And I wish that I belonged to my favorite elder, which we would go preaching all the time. And eventually I started telling on my parents, because that's what they teach you to tell.
Yeah.
And of course, when you tell something significant, it will come back to them. So that was the last draw of, and when I was at home, it was bad. So I left when my mom went preaching on a Saturday with my sister's congregation. And then before the whole thing, like I worked in a pharmacy, and then the police officer who does detail, he's the one who, got me. So I was just like, okay, before we go preaching, come get me, and my dad will be ready to go to preaching, so I can just leave, and then they can be focused on that, because their organization is what comes first. So I will not be in their mind, because they can't go like, oh, I'm not gonna be preaching because I'm moving out. So I was pretty strategic, and I think that's one of the thing, I don't know if that's part of me. A question I often ask is, how much of me is Jehovah's Witness and how much of me is me? Mm. And I'm discovering who me is, but I also know my past is part of me. So if I was not Jehovah's Witness, who would I be? I'm not stuck in those questions, making it give me a mind headache, but it's like cool to ask, kind of a curiosity.
See, I get stuck with the mind headache. I'm like, I'm like, who am I? You know, like, you know, because it's, I want it to not be a part of me, but it is. So how do I embrace that without letting it take over? Like, I'm on that journey still, you know?
Right. As you say the word embrace. Yeah, definitely. And that's why I ask which principles. I had a conversation with a gentleman, and I mentioned that there is religion, there's spirituality. And as we see, they are in the same house. But somehow a lot of people who are in that house only do the religious part, which is the practice and a dogma and all the rules, and maybe 1% does this, which is the spirituality, which is the being the kind, empathetic, compassionate, and the non-shunning and all the good stuff. And they forget that part. And they just stick to the rules kind of a part, which is weird. But once you do this one, even without religion or with religion, you're in the right path, because that's human. That's mm-hmm. life. That's the universe. And so I kept those principles, like, do unto others what you want others done unto you. Mm-hmm. Those things, like, no man hit himself enough to hurt himself, kind mm-hmm. of a thing. And I treat other people. That's funny. I watched a thing about Mother Teresa, how there's a lot of shit about her, but all the good stuff about her, I learned and I practice in my life. One of her favorite quotes, two of them, but one of them that I like is she mentions that when she sees somebody, she doesn't judge them because she sees them as their Jesus. Mm-hmm. And because Jesus is number one in her life, she's going to treat that person as Jesus. And be even without being religious, I love that, because the way I turn it around is I see that person as myself. Since I do not hate myself, I will not hate that person.
Yes.
But if I see that person as other, separate than me, then mm-hmm. I give myself leeway to hate that person. So that's some principles that I keep to make my life work.
Yes. I don't know if you heard of the book, The Four Agreements.
Love it.
Like, don't take anything personal.
Yes.
And you know what else I love is Bob Marley. I'm not going to quote this right, but he basically said, it's not that the day is perfect, it's that you saw the perfection in the day.
Yeah.
You know, it's like, there's so much I can still hold on to from being raised a witness. Like the scripture where Jesus said the greatest commandments are to love God and you love your neighbor as yourself. And I remember this one brother saying, how can you love your neighbor if you don't love yourself? And it was all about self-love. That is the only time I ever heard anybody in 26 years talk about self-love.
Right.
And it's true. You cannot, it's like RuPaul says, you cannot love anybody else if you don't love yourself.
Yep.
And then another scripture was John, like the Apostle John was my favorite. And he said, there is no fear in love. Perfect love throws fear outside, and God is love. And so that's what I, instead of viewing God as an old white guy on a golden throne, I try to think God is love. So it's like 2 + 2 = 4. Well, 4 = 2 + 2. God is love, then love is God. So I try to like reprogram myself that way. And then if there's any fear, if I notice any fear, I'm like, no, I throw it away.
Good. Nice.
No.
Nice.
That's what got me through.
Yeah. What can Jehovah's Witnesses improve on?
I mean, they need a whole overhauling of how they handle when people report that there's been sexual abuse. They need to completely overhaul their procedures, but I don't think they're ever going to. And that's going to be their downfall. It already is. They're going broke.
Mm.
They restructured how they own the Kingdom Halls now instead of the congregation owning them, so that they can flip them. They build them like just regular buildings so that after a few years they can sell them. They're really just a real estate company now, you know? I mean,
yeah, they're pretty smart. I've learned entrepreneurism through them. And if you actually, it's like you can either be blind or you can also be blind but still learning your ways, kind of a thing. I think I was like blind but learning when I was touching the walls and I was learning patterns. And that's how I'm good with speaking and going, basically all the stuff we're taught, keeping the good stuff, basically. Yeah. So you mentioned with the real estate. Wow. Yeah, and they're big on real estate. So let's now talk about your Instagram. Do you have your phone? You can go through it for a second so I can.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. Because there's certain things I wanted to point out.
Okay.
Cloud tier design. Okay. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. See, that's another thing. I go by cloud tier because it's a poem I wrote when I was like 15. Are the clouds, or is it raining or are the clouds crying? You know, like things are just all about how you look at it. You know, and you could say, oh, the clouds are crying. This weather's so depressing because I grew up in Tacoma, Washington, near Seattle. You know, it rains all the time. Or you could see it. It's raining. Like the earth is getting water and these beautiful plants are growing.
Yes. I do. I totally think about the latter when people at work or even in the house says, oh my God, bad weather. And I said, if it rained, you wouldn't enjoy the good weather. It's like... Yeah, it's like, why are you calling it bad? You, that rain, you drink in the water and yes, it's moisturizing the air. Yes. After a storm, it smells so nice. How yes, can you say it's bad? Yes. I love the smell of wet dirt. It's like, you can almost taste it. Yeah, yes, totally feel you. So on that Instagram, okay, so actually I was going to ask you, why is it called cloud tier? And then you mentioned, you already answered that. Great. So there's a post, it says, healing isn't linear. Mm, and you yes, please, I read it, of course, but can you tell the audience what that means for you?
Well, so on this account, I post my art and then every fourth post, I just post like a quote that really moves me or something I just really learned. And this, healing isn't linear. I felt like I had been in remission from panic attacks for quite a long time. And then I started teaching full time. And then COVID started. And we went back to in-person teaching. And by February, early February this year, I started having panic attacks again. And then, and I knew, okay, that's my body telling me you need to make big changes. And that's all really like the depression I suffered when I was a Jehovah's Witness. That was my body saying, you need to make big changes. Like you need to get out of this cult is really what it was doing. So thankfully this time I knew what to do, but I didn't do it till like mid-March. I went on a leave of absence. I did an outpatient program where I just met on Zoom for like psychology education and group therapy. And I, the whole time I'm thinking like, oh, it's because I'm an ex-Jehovah's Witness. It's because I have PTSD. There's something wrong with me. And then, and I really, and they said this in my education was like, healing isn't linear. Just because like our calendars or our clocks are so linear and our culture is so linear, that's not how our bodies are. That's not how our minds are. That's not how we heal. We can take what feels like two steps forward and then one step back. Because like going through what I did as a teacher during a public education teacher during a world pandemic, I learned a lot. It was very hard, but I think I handled things better because I had more mental health coping skills than I did like say when I was getting out of, you know, when I got disfellowship from Jehovah's Witnesses, I didn't drink at all, even though I thought about it. I haven't drank for over 5 years because I realized that's just not good for me. Like me personally, it's not good for me. So, you know, and just not being discouraged, like when you think you've conquered one thing and then you end up kind of dealing with the same challenge. Well, maybe there's just maybe something more minute to learn that you didn't learn last time.
Right.
Yeah.
Right. So how about the next one that says feelings aren't fatal?
Yeah, that's a that's a tough one. So I didn't even tell anybody I used to be a Jehovah's Witness for years. The first guy I dated 2 years after I was disfellowshipped, I didn't tell him for like 4 months or something. Like, I mean, we were always at each other's house. We I moved out to Houston because this was where he was like, he worked out of, I guess. He was just on assignment in Albuquerque when I met him. And the next guy, I dated him for like 2 years. The next guy I dated, I didn't tell him for like maybe 2 months. I never told him my friends. It was just like this part of my life I just want to forget about. I don't want to have any feelings. I don't want to feel them. But I didn't know that. I was just like working full time and a part-time job, going to school full time, volunteering all the time, like not giving myself enough time to think and feel, unless it was like really late at night and I just cry myself asleep for apparently no reason, you know. But then in 2016, I'd already been dating my husband for 2 years, and I felt safe with him. I felt like, I guess my body was like, okay, now you can bleh. I broke down. I was having like so many health issues, and I really believe it's because I was not allowing myself to feel. I had to feel the loss of my family, feel the loss of my sisters, feel the loss of my friends, even feel the loss of my cousin who was murdered. I just was like, I gotta survive. I gotta go, go, go. So it's something I try my best to allow myself to feel. And that's, I'm the kind of person I just want to be like, I'm good, I'm fine, let's go. You know? Like today is my baby sister's 36th birthday. The last 2 years, I didn't even think about it. And that's usually her birthday is like the toughest one for me. She's my baby sister. If she's getting older, I'm getting older, you know, she's 36. So I allowed myself to feel. I had a good cry about an hour before I came on here with you. Just let it out. Let out those toxins. It's okay.
You know, I'm still working on that. The first time in 20 years or more, I've cried 2 Sundays ago. And it wasn't like it was half a cry because I was on a bus going home with coworkers. And my favorite song came on, which is from Romeo and Juliet, 1978, maybe 1968, the song called What is a Youth? And I cried because it reminded me of my last lover. And I'll have a video about that last August. And I cried and I didn't hold back. And I didn't know I was crying until probably like the third part in of the crying. Yeah. And wow. And crying is something else. And of course I went back into the, okay, gotta keep going and no feelings.
Yeah.
But yeah. As much as the lover I had, the experience was crazy. And he told me that the next question I'll ask you is, he says, be vulnerable, it's okay. But I'm working on it. I have an issue with vulnerability because when I became vulnerable with him, and I'm not blaming him because he's being who he is, and it's not his responsibility to fix me or mm-hmm. to even care for my bullshit, because it's my bullshit, my trauma. Mm-hmm. But I was hurt because I felt abandoned. And I wasn't, it's just, he got to do him. I can't blame him. But of course, your psyche, I felt abandoned. And I felt that after 20 years, I'm vulnerable. And I shouldn't have. And I still have that thinking. So I'm working on that. And part having the podcast is to, like you sharing your story. And I'm going to, initially, it was me sharing my story of no shame, no guilt, no judgment. Mm-hmm. And then as I'm going on, I'm in many groups, and I have an ex-Mormon group that I have, and a lot of people are sharing their shame and their guilt and their judgment. And I said, wow, how about if I include others? Because mm-hmm. it's in service that you find yourself. So there goes including other people. So my next thing is that resonate with me from I read on your IG is vulnerability is the strongest of strength. And I was just like, why did I have to read this? I have to talk about it. So please teach me.
Yeah. I mean, it's not something, that comes from Brené Brown. I don't know if you've heard of her. Brené Brown. She's awesome. She's actually here in Houston. She's a professor at University of Houston. She has a book called Daring Greatly, and she talks about vulnerability, and it's true. It sounds like counterintuitive, like vulnerability is a strength. What, you know, but it is. If you can withstand that discomfort and weather that storm of being vulnerable, you actually are developing strength.
Right, right. I think it's my ego in the way, definitely. And mm-hmm. probably like a men thing too. Men don't cry and men are vulnerable, yeah. et cetera. And I'm so ready to get rid of this stuff. It's not serving me.
Mm-hmm.
And so, yeah.
It's not that you're vulnerable all the time with everyone. You get to choose. So that's good, you know. But yeah, I really recommend reading or just watching like some videos from Brené Brown.
Definitely, I look her up. I do love reading books and learning more things. And the last one on your IG that I like is To Be Free, Surrender.
Yeah.
Yeah. Surrender, be vulnerable for me.
to me, I think of, like, I was always, like, we're all going down this, like, river of life, right? And I'm like, I want to go over here, and I want to go over here. And that's just not the way the river's taking me. And so when I just surrender, like, okay, I'm just going to float down this river. But I'm making that choice. I'm making the choice to surrender. So I still am using my free will. And things just flow. You know, like, getting used to life flowing feels really weird. Like, I was just telling my husband last night, I'm like, I'm not struggling right now in life. Like, we're financially, we're okay, we're good. I'm not in a job that is high stress, which I used to always be drawn to. I guess I'm still drawn to it because I think you get addicted to the adrenaline of stress when that's mm-hmm. all you knew growing up. And I'm like, this feels so weird. Like, like I'm just floating, I'm surrendering, it's all, ooh, this is good. You know, I'm like, this is so weird. But, and I actually feel like depression and anxiety about it. And I'm like, okay, we'll take the role of the observer and just step back and just observe my feelings, my thoughts, try to see the bigger picture, you know? And yeah, when you like I didn't ask to be born with the talent to draw and paint, right? I don't really, and also I've been feeling on my heart that like being public speaking or telling my story like I am today is something that it just, I need to do.
Mm-hmm.
I don't want to.
Like, oh my God, I used to be in your shoes. Prior to our conversation this morning, I had this conversation with Rodney Allgood. He does a group of, I'll send it to you and I'll put the link on the description so people can also see it. So his group is all Empowered Ex-Jehovah's Witnesses.
Oh, and definitely.
Yes. So he's empowering Ex-Jehovah's Witnesses. And conversation we had, exactly what you said, you don't want to, but it's like, it's there. You kind of like don't, you want to, but you don't want to. And I was there. I was in the place where, okay, so what happened to me is, just like part of Bible when the flock was surrounding Jesus or somebody and they kept coming and there was like three people, then 300 and 3,000. Yeah. Mm-hmm. And it was overwhelming. I would have strangers come to me on the street, on the train. Even I had a roommate the first day we met, we hung out for 5 hours of her crying about things that happened in her life, like deep things. Mm. And of course, I give myself to people. But then afterwards, I felt empty because I wasn't healed myself.
Mm-hmm.
So I was giving my half cup, the last cup. And then I was parched. So I hated that experience and I hated that feeling. And I was people pleasing, basically giving my all. So now I make sure my cup is overflowing. Mm-hmm. So when they take the one that's overflow, I can still have a full cup, and that's my boundary, and that's my so now I'm like in the healing process. Of course, I don't think we ever fully heal 100% because as we go in life, things keep happening. Mm-hmm. And we have to heal that on top of what else was happening. But I would say overall, my past is pretty healed up. Not 100%, of course, but pretty healed up where I can, someone can come in, I can give them whatever filled up, and I can still have my own. And I don't take their trauma either. That's another thing. As an empath, I would take their trauma, and that's not good for me. And I just have to keep it there. And that gift, people would say, I see your aura, I can feel it. That's what drawn me toward you. And that's why I'm telling your story and be there. And I didn't like that. I would be against that fate or that gift or whatever you could call it for the longest time. Mm-hmm. And essentially, as I do, I've done prior to this podcast, I've done like so many other things. And it kept going through that. Whatever I've done, it keeps circling back to people connection and people wanting to come to me for connection. Mm-hmm. And I just had to be, okay, I hear you. I won't deny anymore. And so, I totally feel you.
So you surrendered, but you learned, oh, I have oars, I have a bow, I can navigate and still be healthy and be myself, but you are not the river. Like, you're not in control of this river, but you have the tools to navigate it.
Right,
instead
right.
Instead of being like, oh, I guess I'm just, you know, I don't know where you're taking me. You know, I was like, you know, like I'm really good at event planning and networking and getting people hooked up with each other that need each other. And I'm like, I don't want to do this, but I don't know. I just surrendered to it. And so now I'm planning this big event called Chalk Crawl, which can be enjoyed by anyone in the whole world because we're going to have an on-demand video. Yeah. So I'm a chalk artist. That's something I didn't want to be a chalk artist. I wanted to be like, have my art hanging in galleries and stuff, you know, like you just learn to be like, oh, okay, well, I'm going to enjoy this. I'm going to choose to enjoy this. I'm going to get everything I can out of it and just chill out. Just go with it, baby. You know,
there's a podcast I listened to. It's from Summer Mastratic. Her podcast is called Flow Dreaming. So there's a topic she talks about and she tells you how to flow with it. And then she does like a little close your eyes and kind of like a little meditation flowing thing. And I've learned to flow with life because when you're in that boat, you either have the tools and you can go with the flow or if you want to be a people pleaser, other people will take that oar for you and do their thing. And then you freaking out and you feel powerless because they are going against the current. Or you can be in that boat and freak out. Yeah. And that's like,
you can hug a rock or hug a tree and be like, I don't want to go.
Yes, that too. And so learning how what works best for you at that moment. And I learned not to push things and not to force the current to go faster or slower or stop. Because another reason why I live in the present, because the past is gone and the future is not there, but I know what I do now will help create the future. So therefore, another quote from my guru, Sadhguru, he says that, what kind of life would you have? Would you like a hard one or easy one? So choose an easy. If the answer, most people would say easy. Even if you think you do not like yourself, I don't think anyone dislike themselves. I think we don't like ourselves, so we behave on that. But even if you think you don't like yourself, you're gonna choose an easy one, because that's any being, even a roach, before you come and kill it, it wants survival. We all want that. So therefore, and we as humans, we choose it, like animals instinctively, they choose it. And as humans, we have the choice to stay and get, sometimes when a car wants to swerve and I'm like, you know what? It's my right away. You can hit me if you want. So that's my choice of destruction and staying in that path where I could just run. So I do that a lot. I'm like, hey, it's You have red light, buddy. But yeah, so we have that choice and we have to choose wisely. Yeah.